हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे, जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे। जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे। जय सीता राम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीता राम लक्ष्मण हनुमान। जय सीता राम लक्ष्मण हनुमान जय सीता राम लक्ष्मण हनुमान। जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय। जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय जय गौर निताय। जय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पारा। जय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पराजय प्रभु पारा। प्रभुपा 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 जय जय प्रभुपा।
जय ओम शुपाल परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महराशील प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम नित्यलीला प्रविष्टोम शुपाल परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महराशील प्रभुपाद की अनंतकोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविंद श्यामगुंड राधागुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की జగన్నాథపురి ధామ్కి, ద్వారకాపురి ధామ్కి, గంగమాయికి, యమునమాయికి, తులసిదేవికి, భక్తిదేవికి, సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌరవ ప్రేమనంది. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద. నమాంశ పదాయ కృష్ణ ప్రస్థాయ భూతలేశ్వరి భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి దినామిని నమస్తే సరస్వదేవం గౌరవాణి ప్రజారిణి నిర్విశేషూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి. ఓం నమో భగవదే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవదే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవదే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయా చక్షురున్మీలితాం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదా మహ్యం దదాదిం స్వపదాంబికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురుం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాదం సహగణరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనాసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపదాం సహగణలలితాం శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధో జగల్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంద రాధాకాంద నమోస్తుతే. సప్తకాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే బృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే. వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధూభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. ఓం పాఠాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవతాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణ మునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణిం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినిం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణిం. నమోస్తుతే వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధే హుల్లారవిందాయత పత్రనేత్ర యేన త్వయా భారత తైల పూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీపాం. ప్రపన్న పారిజాదాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకబాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమాం. వసుదేవసుతం దేవం సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్ససుధీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహద్. వసుదేవసుతం దేవం కంసజానూరమర్దనం దేవగీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం. భీష్మద్రోణతటా జయధ్రతజల గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవదీ కృపేణ వహని కర్ణేన వేలాకుల. అశ్వత్థామాభికర్ణ ఘోరమగర దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సోత్తీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణ నదీ కైవర్తక కేశవా. పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానకేసరం హరికథ సంబోధనాబోధితం లోకై సజ్జనషల్పదైరహరః ప్రవీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్ భారత పంకజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే. మూకం కరోతి వాజాలం పంగుం లంఘయతే గిరిం യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സംഗവദൈർ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത സദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ we were discussing last Sunday from the 12th chapter, Bhakti Yoga from Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna has, at the end of this chapter, made a list of qualities, what is expected of a devotee. In other words, not only devotees, whether he is a jnani or even one who practices any other yoga system, they are expected to have these qualifications. In other words, for anyone who wants to advance spiritually, these qualifications are necessary. This is the important point. Bhakti Yogam, of course, it is spoken in the Bhakti Yogam in the context that for a devotee it is absolutely essential, and the nature of a pure devotee is reflected in those qualities mentioned in this chapter. But apart from that, anyone who wants to go back to Krishna, anyone who wants to go back to the spiritual world, apart from the devotee, even for them, these qualifications are necessary. That is why they are mentioned as, Krishna will say at the very end, edu dharmyamrutam idam. Dharmyamrutam means, this is the nectar of dharmam. A dharmam that is perfection. In that, these qualities will automatically come to that individual. That is what Krishna is pointing out there. So, Krishna's way of presenting things is different than anybody else in this world. In the sense that, we will see that when you move on to the next chapter, how Krishna is different from others. The way Krishna presents things is such that one never puts pressure on anybody that you have to do this, you have to do that. No. He says to us, puts all the facts in front of us and tells us, if you want to do this, this is what will be the result will come out of it. If you do not follow this, this is what the result will be, and leave the choice to us to make that decision. Just like Krishna did that with Arjuna also. Never forces anyone on anything. It's always Krishna brings us to the point and makes us understand that this is the fact of life. This is the reality of the situation. That for a living entity who is under the control of Maya, who is completely under the influence of the three modes of material nature, in other words, he has no opportunity to get to know what is the truth. It is not possible. Under the conditions, modes of nature, it is very difficult for a person to know which way to go. So only at that time we realize it, that the knowledge what is given in the Bhagavad Gita is the only guiding force for the living entity to go further from the grips of nature. So discussing that, Krishna has taken us to the point verse 17 in the chapter 12. Krishna says, Yona Hrishadi na dveshti na shochati na kamshadi shubha shubha parityagi bhaktimanya same priya. So all these people, Krishna has mentioned all these qualities, people with all these qualities are all dear to me, Krishna says. Yona hrishyadi na dveshti na shochati na kamshadi. Krishna says, Yona hrishyadi na dveshti. In other words, one who does not overwhelmed with happiness when some happiness comes to him. In this world, as we know, that happiness and distress is constantly coming and going. That is the nature of this material life. Material life is like that. What we call as happiness is also in relationship with the sense enjoyment. Similarly, distress also, all these things are in relationship with the mind. Isn't it? In relationship with the mind. Either, whether it is a happiness coming from sense enjoyment, or any other kind of happiness in relationship with the bodily extension, for example, in relationship with the family or with the society, or different things. Whatever happiness that comes is also in relationship with the senses and the mind. Similarly, the distress also is affected by to the person only when it is affected in the mind. The mind is the cause of the repository of all this happiness and distress. So Krishna is saying, Yona Hrishyati na Dveshti. When one happiness is experienced in that way, he does not enjoy, he does not get affected by that. Na Dveshti. Nor when distress comes, he is affected by that. That is what is expected from a person who wants to go back home to Krishna. Because these kind of dualities of the material world, one has to transcend. How to transcend them? That's what Krishna will explain later. How to transcend the modes of nature, how to transcend the dualities of the material world. Throughout Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita also, you will find the same point stressed again. Na pashyam ubhayam mune. Vedavyasa Maharshi says in the Bhagavadam that when Krishna appeared in front of him, Vedavyasa Maharshi was going to write Srimad Bhagavadam. At that time, what did he experience? Na pashyam ubhayam mune. That ubhayam, the feeling of happiness and distress, the duality has gone away from him. That is what he experienced at that point. So in order that the duality has to go from us, we have to start analyzing this thing in our own mind, and proper with contemplation one can come to some stability in one's own mind about these things. That is why it's spoken like that. Yona Hrishyati na Dveshti na Shochati na Kamkshati. No, not happiness, not distress will disturb him. Example is that once a man was sitting in a railway station on a platform, and he was sometimes laughing himself without being no one around him. He was laughing on his own, and sometimes he stops laughing and becomes very, very serious. So some other people who were observing this went up to him and asked him, "What has happened to you?" He said, "You are smiling, laughing at your own without any cause. There's nothing, nobody is talking to you, but you're just laughing. And some of the time you are looking very serious. Is that something wrong with you?" He said, "No, nothing has happened. Actually, what was happening was, I was joking to myself," he said. "That I was having a joke to myself." Within himself, he was experiencing kind of something what he has experienced before. From there, some humor he got out of that. And he was enjoying that. And some of the time he became very serious, because when he thought about the consequences of some of the activities what he has performed, he realized that the disastrous results can come from that. In this way, within oneself, one could accommodate one's feelings and emotions. That will be the best thing. If one can accommodate the experiences of this world within oneself, rather being affected by that, Krishna says, Yona Hrishyati na Dveshti. That he is not saying that you should go all the way out to enjoy yourself because there is some happiness has come in life. Sometimes they do like that, isn't it? As soon as the examinations is passed, immediately there should be a party for everybody, or the whole world should celebrate the passing of the exam. Similarly, if mostly the enjoyment is planned in a big way, whenever there is a little happiness. And similarly, different things, all these birthday parties and all this is centered around these things. But not realizing that for transcendental life, for spiritual life, these things are not very conducive. Yona Hrishyati na Dveshti. This happiness will come and go. One has to learn that from the very beginning, not to get affected by that. That is what Krishna is saying there. That in order that these things do not influence our transcendental consciousness, not to hit our inner self, which is above all these things, and to keep that not affected by these different vichevams coming from that. Vichevam means the mind has got one nature, avaranam and vichevam. We have talked about that before. Vichevam means constantly things coming over and taking over the mind and engaging the mind in different thoughts from that. If one has to get the mind under control, one has to stop this vichevams coming to it. Similarly, with the covering potency also, which is called as the avaranam, which is the influence of maya, one can penetrate through that only when one becomes transcendental to it. And to become transcendental means not to get affected by the material modes of nature. That's what Krishna is saying. Yona Hrishyati na Dveshti. Then, na Shochati na Kamkshati. That this hankering and lamentation, that is another important aspect of our life. Constantly the mind is dictating to us, this is required, that's required. So many things are needed. Every time senses comes into contact with the mind, immediately the desire builds up inside from the attachment that is caused by that. So Krishna is saying there, na shochati na kamshati, that the lamentation and the distress that comes from that, and the hankering and the distress come from that, that is also one has to learn to avoid. It is very, very important, these things, because when we look at ourselves, when we start looking inwards, in other way, when we start looking inwards, we will notice that all these things are our problems in life. The problems manifest in this way, but we are not able to go beyond than that. And we also think that everybody else is happy in this world, it's only me who is suffering. This is also another nature of the mind. Mind is telling us, oh, why I am putting into this situation? And this kind of lamentation has to stop. This kind of lamentation has to stop. Everyone under the three modes of material nature is going through distress in this world. There is no one free from that. And it is not easy to escape from that. Krishna says, don't try to change this world, change yourself. That is the easiest thing to do, rather than to make the adjust the situation all the time. Once it so happened, there was one doctor who was very, very... In other words, he never prescribed too many medicines to the patient. That was his nature. He tried to avoid that as much as possible. And in one instance, somebody came up to him and told him that I have a lot of mental problems. I'm suffering from different kinds of stresses. I'm really in trouble and I need some medicines, he said to the doctor. So the doctor said to him that he examined him. And he realized that, strictly speaking, the patient has no disease as such. There was no disease in him. And he was healthy enough. But at the same time, due to working too long or overworked, and due to the stresses of life, he has been feeling that stress too much, and it was affecting him a lot. So what he said to him was, he said to him, go down from here. There is a theater next, a few minutes away from here. Go to the theater. There is a movie there. Charlie Chaplin is playing in that movie. Go and watch that movie. You'll be alright, he says to him. He said to him like this. So what did the patient say to him? He says to him, I am Charlie Chaplin, he says. So in other words, the people think that Charlie Chaplin is always smiling and making joke all the time. But is he free from distress? No, he is also not free from distress. He has his own problems which he had to go through, like everyone else in this world. So from this you can see that we may be thinking something in our own mind is making up various ideas in our head, thinking that only us who are suffering, everyone else is enjoying in this world. Strictly speaking, Krishna says, A Brahma Bhuvana Loga, right from Brahmalogam onwards, right up to the lower planets, it is the same story. It's not much different. All about under the anxiety that is created by the modes of nature. Yona Hrishyati na dveshti, na shochati na kankshati, shubha shubha parityagi, bhakti manya samaye priyam. So Krishna says, na shochati na kankshati, shubha shubha parityagi, shubham ashubham, auspicious, inauspicious. So he does not consider, Krishna says, a person who is trying to advance on the spiritual path, he does not consider this is auspicious, this is inauspicious. He doesn't think like that and does not give it up in that way. Shubha shubha parityagi bhakti manya samaye priyaham. That it is quite natural that when one acts in this world, happiness will come in some form. Sometimes distress will also come. That is the nature of this world, that you can't change it. So, when one realizes that, you know, if you give up these activities in the name of Krishna consciousness, that will also cause problems. The point what Krishna is trying to say here is, Shubha Shubha Parityagi, that everything in favor of Krishna will not cause any difficulty. Everything what is performed to please Krishna should not cause any problems. Everything else will cause problems in this world. That's what Krishna is saying. That Na Shojadi Na Kamshadi. That, and also, Shubha Ashubha Varityagi. That means, he is always not discriminating. He is not expecting any good from that, nor is expecting any bad things to come from that. That is the nature of that person, who is able to look at things in a different way. So, generally, why do we have this mentality or this way of thinking of this is good, this is bad? Where did this originate from? Shastra is saying there that the origin of all this is false ego, the ego inside. It is from there that this business has started, to accept something as good, to accept something as bad. That has come from that. That something which is satisfy my ego or satisfy my needs, I consider that as auspicious. Something that does not satisfy my needs and does not satisfy my ego, that is considered to be inauspicious. So, shubha shubha parityagi, that shubham and ashubham, this good and bad, this kind of acceptance and rejections, Krishna says, that has to go. Because once the false ego is gone from inside, that will also go. That is the way it works. In the Upanishads, these things are discussed a lot more in detail. In the Upanishads, there is a story in the Upanishads about this. That story is so illuminating in relationship with this. Generally, when the spiritual master in the Gurukula system, when he has accepted the students or the disciples whom he has taught, he keeps a close observation of the nature of the student. In other words, he gets an opportunity to assess or to look into the shortcomings or the problems what the student has in advancing in spiritual life. This is what is observed by the spiritual master. Spiritual master's duty is to see what is actually causing the obstruction on his way in advancing the spiritual path. Once it so happened that quite a few students were with one spiritual master in Gurugram, and they were being educated there. After several years of education, one day the spiritual master realized there was one among them who was not willing to give up his false ego. The false ego, he was a very good student, but at the same time, the false ego in him was also very high. So he thought about this for a while, and he realized that whatever knowledge he has acquired will be of no use to him unless he gives up this false ego. This is how the Vedic philosophy is teaching us, that all this knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, this knowledge will come to our help or will save us from a disaster only if we are relieved from the false ego in us. So the spiritual master's decision was that he must first get rid of this false ego of a person. How do you get rid of the false ego for somebody else? One way is one can avoid such people who have that false ego. That's one thing. But sometimes when you have to deal with, it is sometimes very painful and difficult also when false ego comes in there. And ahankaram, as it is referred to, ahankaram in the creation, if you look, you will see mahatattvam, pradhanam, mahatattvam, and three modes of nature. And then ahankaram comes from that. Satya ahankaram, rajasahankaram, tamasahankaram. So ahankaram means that false ego that has come up. And this ahankaram is the one which is causes a lot of problems. And the moment ahankaram comes in, me and mine also builds up from there. So the spiritual master thought about this, and he called his disciple to him and told him, without telling him about his false ego, he told him like this. He said, you should go take this 500 cows with me. That's how the Upanishad story says. Take this 500 cows with me, go to the forest. When they are doubled, only then you come back to me. He said, only when this 500 cows becomes 1,000 cows, then you come back to me. He says to the student. In the Gurukula system, the student has no choice. He has to accept what he has been instructed to. So the student took these 500 cows and went to the forest. When he was in the Gurukulam, he was always showing his authority on others. He was always playing a role of an authority or showing his superior position to others. And his false ego was hurting some other students in the same Gurukulam. So when this was happening, the spiritual master realized the only way is to send him through this process. So he sent him to the forest with these 500 cows. The student takes the 500 cows and goes to the forest. So when he got to the forest with the cows, initially he was controlling the cows very strongly, because that controlling nature in him was so strong that he made sure that all the cows were under his control. But when he stayed in the forest for some time, due to his association with the forest, particularly the river, the trees, and the land in the forest, and since there was no other human being for him to show exercise his ego on them, little by little his consciousness started changing. He started changing himself. Nothing was required. Nobody need to tell him anything. Just by the association with the nature, little by little he started realizing, after all, why do I have to bother about them like this? These cows, what have they done to me? Why do I have to go and control them like this? Because that controlling nature that has come from him, which was in him very strongly before, it was not going away in the Gurukulam. So the teacher sent him here with the cows, let him live with the cows for some time, and probably it may change his nature. And as the teacher, as the spiritual master thought, exactly the same thing happened. Initially, he used to bring all the cows together every evening and count them and watch them and all. Afterwards, he started thinking, there is nothing to be fearful here. Let the cows have their own life. Let me have my own life. He became come to that conclusion. See, false ego manifests only if there is somebody else to apply that false ego onto. Isn't it? Otherwise, there will be no false ego. Where will be the false ego? To whom will you have the false ego to exhibit? But so, this is what has happened to that person. So, like this, it went on for quite some time. One day, one cow came back to him and stood next to him. When the cow stood next to him, he started looking at the cow, and suddenly he felt that the cow was asking him that, should we not go back? Should we not go back to the Gurukulam again? Because we came from there long ago. He started feeling like that. The cows were in their own way. They were eating the grass and they were eating the other things and resting in the forest all this time. And he was also milking the cow as and when he wanted the milk, and ate the fruits and the milk and lived like that in the forest. But after a year or so, by living like this in the forest, he has realized that how important it is to bring oneself under control, not being affected by the false ego. So he felt the need. The cow gave the impression to him that the spiritual master is expecting us to go back. The cow didn't speak anything. Without speaking, he understood this message is coming from the cow. So immediately what he thought was, he started counting at the number of cows. By then it has already exceeded 1,000 cows. It's already gone beyond 1,000 cows. They've all grown up on their own. They've all grown in the forest. They all took birth and they were growing up with the mother. All these changes that was happening in the cows, that has given him that feeling that now the time has come to go back. The day he decided to go back to them, to the spiritual master told the other disciples, remember that student we had who used to be here, who used to drive everybody mad here with his ego. He is going to come back today. You will see, today there is 1,001 cows will be coming back, he said. So he went like a bull to the forest and he came back like a cow back from there. You see? So that is what was expected. In the Vedic philosophy, in some instances, a human being is not perfect. Some of the animals are perfect. We have to come to that level to improve, get rid of some of the misconceptions in our own head. And that is what has happened. So when he said to the students who were present in the ashram that day, that now 1,001 cows will be coming back. Exactly that day evening, he came back with the 1,000 cows, plus this one cow who has become a cow by nature. And he was also present there. By now, his consciousness has changed. He has come to the realization that in advancing in spiritual life, all these are obstacles for me. This false ego is an obstacle for me. That's going to stop me from realizing Krishna. That consciousness, he got without anybody telling him from his direct experience in the life in the forest. Although it took a year's time, it was worth the while. So most of these things, particularly in ourselves, if it builds up from the childhood and if we fan it too much, it will become problems for us. And it is not something, it is much easier to change it when one is small. But when it gets bigger, it's not that it cannot be given up, but it takes a little time to change this thinking, to change these problems. So Krishna is saying here, Yona Hrishadi na dveshti, na shochadi, na kamshadi, shubha shubha varityagi, bhakti manya same priyaham. Krishna says such a person is very, very dear to me. From Krishna's point of view, those who have cultivated these qualities are eligible for spiritual advancement. In other words, this is the background what is necessary in order that the spiritual knowledge will manifest in a person. Otherwise, if one does not practice it in that way, side by side, if we continue with all our materialistic thoughts, and on the other hand, we are trying to cultivate spiritual knowledge, the spiritual knowledge will not have an effect on the person. So, in order the preparing the ground inside, that is what all these qualities are meant for. In order to prepare the ground inside. Just like, before we sow the seed, we plow the land, isn't it? We plow the land very well. And not only plow it, then add water into it, so that it becomes very potent. And when the seed is thrown, it is able to sprout from there. Similarly, Krishna consciousness also requires that plowing inside. And that plowing process, and what is to be plowed, what are the weeds to be taken out, all this is what Krishna is explaining here. Yona hrishyadi na dveshti, na shochadi, na kamshadi, shubha shubha varityagi, bhakti manya same priyaha. Then, samashatrauja mitreja, tadhamana bhamanayom, shidoshna sukadukheshu, sama sangavivarjidaham. So, in order that the ahankaram or false ego to go away, just like a cow, one is sent to the cow shed, to the goshala, you stay in the goshala. By association with the cows, you will get rid of that false ego. That is what the story is telling us. The Upanishad story is pointing out this verse. Now in the next verse, samashatra ujamitreja tadhamana abamanayo shidoshna sukadukheshu samasangavivarjidaham. Tulya nindastudir mauni sandushto yena kenachil aniketastiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraham. Now, after this, what does Krishna say? Samashatrauja mitreja tadhamanabamanayom. These are to be analyzed very much in detail. What is this shatru? What is this mitram? What is this manam? What is avamanam? Because the origin of all these things, where it comes from and how it affects us. Sama shatrauja mitrejam. Equally, the thought of shatru and mitram, where did that come from? He is my friend, he is my enemy. We think like that, isn't it? Strictly speaking, nobody is your friend, nobody is your enemy either. But somehow, in our own mind, we have decided that so-and-so is going to be my friend and so-and-so is going to be my enemy. So, this conception that shatru and mitram, that itself has come from what is called Vedabuddhi. Vedabuddhi means to start seeing, strictly advanced devotees see Krishna's presence in every living entity. But when one does not see Krishna's presence in another living entity, he starts thinking that he is my friend and he is my enemy. That comes from there. That when one realizes everybody is a part and parcel of Krishna, then that thought will not come to him anymore. That will not happen. Because the one living entity acts in a particular way due to his karma in this world. That karma is driving him in that direction. And somebody else is happen to be your friend according to his karma and that particular situation where one is put into. So, due to various external reasons, one acts in a particular way in this world. And shatru and mitram conception has come because of Bhedabuddhi. And this Bhedabuddhi is the biggest problem. When one starts building up that kind of consciousness, Krishna says that will come on your way in spiritual life. That will come on your way in spiritual life. So that's why it is said there, sama shatrauja mitrejam. Shatru and mitram, that should not exist, that should not exist for a devotee. There should not be a shatru or there should not be a mitram. There should be a friend, there should be no friend, there should be no enemy either. Just like we discussed this before, when Krishna was here and when Ramachandra was here, it may appear that they were enemies of Ravana or they were enemies of Shishubala or Kamsa. Krishna had no enemies. As far as Krishna is concerned, Kamsa is not his enemy. Shishubala is not his enemy. But whereas Kamsa and Shishubala is concerned, Krishna is their enemy. That's how they thought. Krishna never thought that Kamsa or Shishubala is my enemy at any time. Nor did Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, think any time that Ravana is my enemy. He never once spoke in that way. That's how they acted all their life through. Krishna and Ramachandra, if you look at their activities in Srimad Bhagavatam and Ramayanam, you will find this, that never once they have exhibited an enmity towards Ravana or towards Kamsa or Shishubala. Even at the last minute, when Kamsa was going to be killed, after he has decided to punish Vasudeva and Devaki in the arena, if you look at in the 10th canto, you will find there, it doesn't say that Krishna has exactly killed Kamsa. When Kamsa pulled out the sword and tried and was abusing Krishna and Balaram very, very strongly in the scene, Krishna jumped in, and at that time immediately Kamsa fell down. And he said, "My dear uncle, why are you talking like this?" This is how Krishna addressed him. "My dear uncle, why are you talking like this?" And by then Kamsa had to leave his body. In fact, what I'm saying is that as far as Krishna and Ramachandra is concerned, there are no enemies. But Shishubala and Dandavakra and Kamsa, they considered Krishna as their enemy from the very beginning. From the very beginning, they considered Krishna as their enemy. If you study in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Shishubala was reacting with Krishna, almost all the time Shishubala abused Krishna, but not once Krishna spoke anything against Shishubala. Because Krishna never took Shishubala as his enemy. Not once. But gave this guarantee to Shishubala's mother that 100 offenses I will tolerate. But the 101st offense, he has to go back to the spiritual world. He can't stay here anymore. This is how kind Krishna is. So 100 offenses he tolerated, and in the Rajasuyam sacrifice, when Shishubala spoke the 101st time that Krishna is not being qualified and started calling him all kinds of names and trying to denigrate him there in front of so many people, when Bhimasena and Sahadeva got up and tried to stop Shishubala, at that Shishubala will not stop. And then Krishna decided that it is now time to change that consciousness in Shishubala and send the Sudarshana Chakra to kill him. And that is how Krishna is. So Krishna does not think that he has any enemies in this world, nor does Ramachandra think that they have any enemies in this world. So, in the same way, Krishna is saying here, a devotee also should not have any friend or enemy. That is the consciousness needed for a devotee. Sama shatrauja mitreja. That only then samam is possible. If you start thinking that he is my friend and he is my enemy, then that equality is not possible. Nobody is our friend, nobody is our enemy either. We are here together for some time in this world. It so happened due to our own karma that we have been brought together. And the very same karma will separate us as well, in the same way. So as long as one is aware of these things, then one can see that the real serious and genuine relationship is only between Krishna and the devotee. Nobody else. All other relationships are temporary. Unfortunately, we can't realize these things. That is the most difficult thing. In the Bhagavatam, these things are brought out in a much more powerful way, because there is examples given in the Srimad Bhagavatam to show this. That our connection with the society, our connection with the community, our connection with the external world, is that is controlling us to a large degree in our life in this world. In the beginning of Ekadasha Skandam, when Vasudeva and Devaki asked Srinarada Maharshi that what should I do now what should I do in my life now to perfect my life? It's a question from Vasudeva and Devaki to Srinarada Muni. Just prior to that, one incident is explained in the Bhagavatam when Krishna destroys the whole Yadava race in making them to fight each other, getting drunk and fight each other and kill themselves altogether. Now, you have to remember this, that this community of Krishna or Krishna's family at that time was the most powerful thing in this world. The Yadavas, most of them were demigods. Many of them were demigods who had come here and taken birth with Krishna in the family. And they were so powerful. In the Bhagavatam, it says like this, that the powerful nature of that race at that time was so high that they could turn the whole world upside down. They were so powerful like that. So when Krishna realized that after his departure, they are going to cause a problem to this world, what did Krishna do? Krishna decided to create this fight within them and finish it up then and there. And only when this happened, Vasudevan Devaki realized at that time, nothing is permanent in this world. Because generally, all of us feel some security and shelter in the community. Isn't it? Community gives a feeling that, oh, we as a community are together. We talk about that in this world. The community gives some kind of security or some kind of shelter to this world. But Vasudevan Devaki felt at that point that this so-called family of Yadus, Yadavas in there, whom Krishna has such a huge number, and that too very, very powerful society they were, even that can destroy in such a short time in Krishna's desire. This was necessary for Vasudevan Devaki to develop detachment from this world. It is for that reason that story is spoken there. Sudeva Goswami saying to Parikshit that with this incident, Vasudevan Devaki realized at that time that nothing is permanent in this world. This thought is not coming to them. After so many years living with Krishna and Balaram as their parents and living a really comfortable life in Dwaraka with the whole family together, they were in a very difficult state. They couldn't go away from this world. There was no desire to go back to the spiritual world. That question was not. Even for Krishna's parents this was happening. What to talk about us? Krishna's own parents could not get the desire to go back to the spiritual world. So it is at that time that Krishna, with his higher thoughts behind, decided that the Yadava race should come to an end. And only when the whole race was destroyed, Vasudevan Devaki started thinking, nothing is permanent in this world. That thoughts have come to Vasudevan Devaki at that time. So you can see from this, that the vairagyam or detachment is necessary for the spiritual knowledge to come. And it is only at that time, Vasudevan Devaki got the opportunity to meet Sri Narada Maharshi. And Sri Narada Maharshi talked to them about their role in this world. That comes in the Bhagavatam like that. So here also, as long as one's mind is anchored in this world, one's mind is anchored in different positions, the family or in the society or in the community or whatever it is, or the nation or this or that, whatever it is, in so many places it finds some kind of grip somewhere. All this grip has to loosen up. Otherwise, vairagyam will not come. And when vairagyam is necessary for the spiritual knowledge to come, to have it, to play its role in our own life. So, here, Krishna is saying here, Tulya Ninda Sudhir Mauni. Krishna says, Samashatrau Jamitreja Tadha Manama Manayo Shidoshna Sugudukeshu Sama Sangavivarjidaha. So, Shatru and Mitram has to be seen in the same way. One can only see that when one is not consider one as a Shatru or a Mitram, or a friend or a enemy. As long as one considers others as friend or enemy, then it is not possible for samam or equal vision to happen. Similarly, tatha manavamanayo, manam and avamanam. Manam means when you are praised, when you are glorified by somebody. Avamanam means when one is insulted or when one is ridiculed by others. So both these situations are painful for a person. When one is glorified, he feels that is also a problem, because that builds up the false ego inside for unnecessary. There is no need for that. Krishna says, "Tatha mana avamana yoho." Krishna is saying here that this manam and avamanam, ego or the honor and dishonor, they are all coming from the modes of nature. They have nothing else to do. So, sama shatrauja mitreja tatha mana vamana yoho shi doshna sugadukheshu sama sanga vivarjidaham. Then, due to our own mind, the frame of mind, or the kind of thoughts that's going through the mind, we develop this understanding somebody as a friend and an enemy. And when they speak, we take it in that way, because of our own inside thoughts that's keeping us to think in that way. Avamanam or manam. So, when one has developed inimical thoughts towards another person, automatically he thinks that whatever he speaks is against me. In that way, he concludes in that way. Similarly, glorification also, they are both harmful. Krishna says here, they are both harmful to the living entity. Then, this is called the kalpana. Kalpana means the mind's decisions that the mind makes up inside, without any logic inside, in there. Mind, according to its own thought processes, it makes up certain things inside, and that's called kalpana. So these kalpanas are there. These are all the kalpana, that he is my friend, this is my enemy. This all come from the mind only. And sometimes, actually not knowing who our enemy is. Our enemy is not outside, the enemy is inside. And that we are not able to identify, nor we are able to recognize. So we start thinking somebody else as our enemy, although the real enemy is our own mind, which is, Krishna says there, isn't it? Uddhareda alpana alpanam alpano sadayal alpanyaiva alpano bandhu alpayiva viribira alpanaha. That Krishna repeatedly mentions this point, that one should go inwards and start allowing the mind to come out of this kind of influences. For example, alpano alpanyaiva alpano bandhu. One who has got the mind under control, for him mind is his friend. And one who has not done that, the mind is his enemy. Or in other words, it is the mind that is creating this friendship and enmity towards other living entities. Isn't it? The mind is that is creating this relationship with other living entities. So Krishna is saying here that in order that this manam and avamanam, insult or honor and dishonor, in order that to go away, the mind has to be brought under control first. And that is when these things are gone away from there. So, strictly speaking, it is better not to think that I have a friend or an enemy. It is better to stay within oneself, ourselves, within ourselves. How do we stay within ourselves? That is what Krishna talks about. He says that it may sound that, is it not selfish thing that one looks after one's own spiritual life in that way? No, it is not selfish. Because the way we have contacted the modes of nature, and the way we have implicated in the modes of nature, all you have to do is to withdraw from the modes of nature. Once you have withdrawn from the modes of nature, then the living entity is situated within himself. Then he is not infected by the happiness and distress of this world. It gives him it releases him from that point. It does not mean that one should not, it is not a game that you play to use others for your own happiness in this world. That's not what it is meant for. That's not what Krishna is saying here. What Krishna is saying here is that not to give this relationship with anyone in the form of friendship and enmity is harmful. In the Bhagavatam, while coming to the same topic, Krishna talks about a huge story there. Krishna talks to Uddhava while presenting the same point there. That is known as Bhikshugita in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam, Ekadashaskandam, Bhikshugita is the last prakaranam, or the last topic that Krishna has discussed. While pointing out, Krishna says there very, very clearly that your so-called friends and enemies, they will all become problems for you at the time of death. At the time of death, they will become problems. So, in order that they don't come and catch your mind at the time of death, it is better to keep that distance right now, before that happens. Not to allow yourself to be victimized by that. So, therefore, from the transcendental point of view, from the spiritual point of view, Krishna is giving us some important instructions. Often we have this feeling, this is all in this understanding that he is a devotee, so he is my friend. Somebody is a non-devotee, so he is my enemy. This feeling has come. In the beginning all these feelings will happen. But in the advanced state of consciousness, Krishna is saying there, all living entities are part and parcel of me. And one who wants to come back to the spiritual world, he does have only that relationship with me, Krishna. Krishna says like that. So, manavamanam. Manam and avamanam, both the honor and dishonor, is nothing but creation of the mind. It comes from the mind. So, Krishna says here, tulya ninda sudir mauni sandushto yena kenajil aniketa sthiramadir bhaktiman me priyo naraham. Then, ninda and stuti. Ninda means the insult, and stuti means glorification. Honor and dishonor, which is manam and avamanam, and ninda and stuti, insult and glorification. All these things has to be understood properly. For example, when one says something good or honorable thing about somebody, one has to understand that the same letters, what you have used for glorifying somebody, if you change the letter's position, you can use the same thing to may insult him also. Isn't it? Is it not? So the letters, if you exchange their positions, some words we create together, we put it together, and we glorify somebody. And the same letters, if you exchange the position, with the same letters, you can insult also in the same way. So in other words, on the glorification or glorification or insult of someone is nothing but letters in two different forms. Letters in two different forms. If you keep that in mind, one will not get affected by that when one glorifies someone or when one insults someone. After all, it is nothing but letters that he has exchanged in that way and used it to glorify me. Otherwise, it has no other meaning to it than that. That is one way of getting out of it. And secondly, other things is, all these are sound waves, isn't it? All of this tulyam, ninda and stuti, they are all nothing but sound waves. And these sound waves, they come. And these sound waves, they come and they go. Beyond than that, it has no other effect on the consciousness of a person. But we, due to our mind being infected with the sound waves, because it becomes the shrotendriyam, the ears accept them, sends to the mind and gives kind of happiness to the mind. Immediately we get affected by that. So, a spiritually serious person, one should analyze these things in one's own mind and try to be not get affected by that. That's what Krishna is saying. Tulya ninda stutir mauni. Tulyam. Tulyam means equality. Ninda as well as stuti. Or in glorification or in insult. In either cases, equality is necessary, Krishna says. Tulya ninda stutir mauni. Then mauni. Mauni means silent. So, devotee is expected, Krishna is saying, that this ninda and stuti, that is something what we have generated in our own mind. He will give you an example for that. Once, I went to see a person who was very, very old. He was over 95 years old. 95 years old. And the family were looking after him. And due to his advanced age, the old people, especially when they get very old, they have a habit of becoming like a child in many of their behavior. You may have noticed that. Some people at least will agree with that. That as you get very old, particularly once you cross 90 and above, it can very easily happen that they will lose, a childishness comes to them in their behavior. It is quite a natural thing with many, many people. And it so happened when I went to see this person that he had this habit of taking his clothes off. And he just felt uncomfortable, like children. They felt uncomfortable sometimes with too many clothes on. So he had this habit of taking his clothes off. But the family members thought that it doesn't look very nice he takes his clothes off when people come like this. And this old person, because he's grown so old and in the hot weather, also he was feeling very uneasy about everything, relationship with the body. And so he had tried to, the family had tried to put the clothes on and keep him covered, so that people, when they come to visit him, they were feeling embarrassed about it. He was not feeling embarrassed, nor when I went to see him, seeing the situation he was in, I wasn't feeling embarrassed, but they were feeling embarrassed about that. That he was not covering himself properly. They felt like that. But why did this come? Because in our own mind we think like this, that this is required in the society. We have developed some understanding in our mind. But that person who has left the world by now, he has been almost to the point of death and he was leaving the world. And to such a person, we were imposing all our morals and standards of this world on him. How will that affect him? You can think like that. That the person's nature and the morals of this world, we have created in this world many rules and regulations. But the person, tulya ninda sudir mauni, sandushto yena kenajal, anigeda stiramadir bhakti manme priyo naraha. Krishna says, one who has gone to that age also brings some benefit in this world. It's not that everything that old is useless. When one gets older, one can also see things, goes back and look at things in a different way. And he can also see that there were so many things we were doing in this world under the instructions of the society, or told by the elders, or so many things like that. And were they all worthwhile? Were they all necessary? That also we have to see in the light of our own activities. So here, Krishna is saying here, tulya ninda stutir mauni, that insult and glorification and all that, one has to keep that. Equality has to come in that. And at the age of 95 and 97, you will not be affected by that. That will not happen to you. But at these middle ages, and in the even the early part of the life, particularly in the youth, it affects very much. And that is the time one has to be more careful than any other time. But when one gets older, one can think that, see that these things have no really any meaning. One will be able to cross over that without being affected by that. So that's why what is wanted from the devotee. Krishna says, Tulya Ninda Sudhir Mauni. Mauni. Krishna says Mauni. Why Krishna says Mauni there? that the mind which is free from all desires or expectations, that is called a maunam. Maunam does not mean just to keep quiet. Just keeping quiet is not maunam. For example, somebody keeps quiet, but at the same time the mind is continuously engaged in different kinds of desires, building up desires inside. That's not maunam. Maunam strictly means that maunam is that quality by which one has relieved oneself from all kinds of expectations. And this maunam, Krishna says, for a devotee it is very good to develop this quality of maunam. Why does he say like that? There must be a reason when Krishna says maunam is necessary. Maunam is necessary because if you think about this, that majority of the problems in this world comes from talking, isn't it? If you're not talking, there won't be any problems also. And this is a indication also to tell us that if you want to stay away from problems, the best thing is to be silent in many instances. Especially when you have to live with people, say so, just like in the family life. Family life, it is the biggest problem. Husband and wife, for example. That's where everything starts, isn't it? All the problems start from there. So this is also, Krishna is saying here, that if you follow this rule of maunam, it can help to avoid a lot of crisis in life. For example, this is a technique what Krishna has given here. That if a husband or wife, they are having all the time problems or difficulties in everything and anything, then the best thing is to take a decision on the very night to go back and decide, from tomorrow onwards, we won't talk to each other unnecessarily. To make that decision. And when we make that decision, you have to make sure that you also do not disturb each other in their life. That means everything has to be done in silence. If you practice that, you will notice after a while, without speaking to each other, you can get the idea across. You will understand what the husband has to say, the wife will understand without saying it. And what wife has to say, the husband will understand without being spoken about it. So this maunam can help in that way also to get out of this kind of situations. Krishna is saying there maunam helps. Maunam is necessary in situations where one finds that the modes of nature is affecting him too much. Krishna is saying tulya ninda sudhir mauni sandushto yena kena jal aniketa sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraham. That one accepting everything according to karmam, whatever that comes in here. So that is why sandushto yena kena jal is accepting sandushti, is satisfied with that, what comes in life. Whichever karmam that brings in, that gives satisfaction to him. Then sandushto yena kena jal, then aniketa sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraha. Aniketam. Aniketam means one who has no place of residence. Does that mean that he gives up everything and walk around in this world? No, that's not what it is meant. Krishna is saying here that one who does not fix his mind in anything permanently, that is what aniketam means. Aniketam means, for example, our attachment to place of residence, our attachment to different places is very, very strong, isn't it? That attachment won't go away easily. And that is not aniketam. That is, aniketam means one who has not feeling any strong relationship with anywhere, in any place of residence or any place, any other attachment to anything in this world. That is aniketam. Aniketam is something, you can only understand this if you think about certain places if you go to. For example, say, just like the places I have seen, that's all I can tell you. Say, for example, in Mumbai, if you go to Mumbai, how people live there.
there is so much shortage of space, and so many people live in such a small area, such a small space. Sometimes in small one room, four or five people, they live there. They cook their food, they eat there, and they sleep there. And in the day, they are all away, going out to work or to school or different places. And in the evening, they come back. And they all have to adjust to each other so much, so they can live peacefully there. Just see, it's not like in other places, particularly big cities like Mumbai, where there is such a huge population and so limited facilities for the accommodation. And the amount of people, they live in such a small area, is so high. So when you go and see these things, you can see that how tolerant they have to be each other to live peacefully in the house. For example, inside the, in this one bed, one room means it's a kitchen is on one corner, and the remaining part is their bedrooms, and they have to change the clothes there, and they have got a bathroom probably attached to that. This is all what they have. And in that, the whole family lives. Family means not one or two members, husband, wife, sometimes the grandparents, and some the children also. They all have to adjust so much to live, manage within this one room. They live like that. So when they have to eat, they'll pull out some table from the wall, comes out, they eat on the outside of the wall, they just push back again. So that's how. And when they have to sleep, they'll come and put their beds next to each other and they sleep at night quietly. Get up in the morning, one after the other, looks out their business and they go. So they have to live like this. This is how it is. Big cities have got this situation. And they still carry on with this. That is, and even while living like that, they cannot be so attached to it. If they are too attached to that, Anigeda will not work there. Anigeda sthira madher bhakti manme priyo naraha. Krishna says here that these kind of situations in life, whereas one sometimes feels that even after having huge palaces to live, and there is nobody to live alone, still he is finding it difficult to live there. Why? The attachment is very much there, but at the same time, that he has not understood the secret of life. That is what Krishna is saying. That Krishna, tulya ninda astu dharmavani sandushto yena kenajal aniketa sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraha. Krishna says aniketan, that quality is necessary, otherwise it will not work. Krishna says, because for a person who wants to go back home to Krishna, everything in this material world has to remain as a temporary situation. Otherwise, if we accept any of this as a permanent situation, we are likely to be deceived by the same consciousness at some point or the other. That is the point Krishna is trying to make. So, just like one example, you know this goods train which carry different goods from one place to another, the railway trains, goods trains. So, these goods trains comes to Mumbai, many of them bringing different goods from the villages in different things. So, once it so happened that, this is just a story, but it is nothing, not just to show that, how this aniketa nature, or not being affected by the place of residence, can help to accommodate with the world easily. That is not only for us, even for other living entities it is true. Not only for human society, even for other living entities it is true, that if one has a consciousness like that, he will not be affected by the external world. So, one of the goods trains used to bring fish from outside to Mumbai. And it used to bring the fish, and the goods train comes and stops at the station. Fish is unloaded, and everything taken away, and the whole wagon will smell fish. It smells fish so much. So, these street dogs, which runs around everywhere looking for food, one of the dogs noticed the smell of the fish coming from the wagon. It got into the wagon. And it got in the wagon, it was having a feast inside, its own feast, inside the wagon. It was having this big feast going on. While the feast was going on, the people who in the railway, the railway authorities who control the trains, he came and closed the door, not knowing the dog has got inside and he was having this feast. So the train all was lined up and the engine attached to it. The train left the station. And the dog, after eating enough, he wanted to come out. He couldn't come out. He wasn't aware that the shutter was pulled and the the doors were closed, he couldn't come out. So for 2-3 days, the dog got stuck inside. The dog got stuck inside. After 2 or 3 days, the train arrived in Chennai. From Mumbai, it arrived in Chennai. When it arrived in Chennai, the railway people opened the wagons, everything. So immediately he jumped out, first thing. This dog was inside. The Mumbai dog came out in the Chennai outside. When he came out inside, his friends were standing there. Similar people who had the similar job in Chennai. They were standing outside and they looked at him. When they looked at him, he started barking. When he barked, they realized that he's not barking in the same way like we bark. It was a Marathi dog, so he said it's barking in a different way. It was not speaking in the Tamil style. It was not barking in the Tamil way. So they felt a little disagreement there. So among them, there was one dog who has come like this before from Mumbai in a similar way. Yes, right. He understood the situation, so he told them, don't bark. He has come like me from somewhere else, so we'll accept him in the same way. So when they accept somebody, do you know how they react to each other? They shake their tails like this, isn't it? They shake their, so both shook their tails like this. But when the Chennai dog shook like this, the Mumbai dog shook like this. Why did he do that? Because in Mumbai, he was so stressed for the space, he couldn't even wag his tail like this, he had to wag like this. So this is just a joke, but to show that, to tell you that, Anigeda Sthiramadir Bhaktiman Me Priyo Naraha, Krishna is saying there that any living entity in this world, if he has to accept this, that Anigeda, that wherever he goes, he is still a part of that society where he is, then he will not be affected by that. So that is what the story is saying to us. That Tulyaninda Sudhir Mauni Sandushto Yena Kenajal Aniketa Siramadir Bhaktimanme Priyo Naraha. That Aniketatvam, or that quality of not being identifying with anything, Krishna says is necessary for a devotee. Because all these things from Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita is only pointing out to one thing. Vairagyam is necessary to advance in the spiritual path. If we get stuck with this world, it is very difficult. Even at the time of death, the very thoughts of this world will come in front of us. It will not leave us. That is the lesson from this. That is why this quality Krishna is stressing on. That as long as we are attached, our attachment grows in this world, immediately the result of that will be that these thoughts will overpower us at the time of leaving this body. And that will be the greatest disaster. Because earlier Krishna said that, like that, isn't it? Krishna says that at the time of death, yamyam vavis maran bhavam tejatyandi kalayabharam. Whatever thoughts are coming to you at the time of death, that will be the thoughts will determine your next body. So if we want to be, not to be influenced by the thoughts of this world, or if we don't want to come back to this world again and to be part of the society here again, important thing is to disconnect it ourselves from here before that situation happens. Yam yam vavismaran bhavam tejatyande kalebharam tam tam evaidi kaundaya sada tadbhava bhavidaha. Krishna says that before. So it is in that context Krishna is saying here, Tulyanindastudir Mauni, Sandushto Yena Kenajal, Aniketa Sthiramadir, Bhaktimanme Priyo Narayaham. So, after saying all these things, Krishna is concluding that chapter. This is the last verse, the 20th verse of that chapter. And this verse is very, very important. Why? Yedu dharmyamadamidam yathoktam varivasade shraddhadanamal parama vattaste adivame priyaham. Krishna says here, that the all the qualities what a devotee should develop, Krishna has spoken here, isn't it? Till now, Krishna has spoken all the qualities necessary. And the symptoms of first-class devotees also explained here. And after that, then who has got, Krishna says, who has got Shraddha? So one who has got Shraddha. Shraddhana malpirama bhaktasya divame priyaha. That is very, very dear to me. Now, Krishna has used a word here, yedu dharmyamrtam. Dharmyamrtam means that process by which that this topic what I have discussed here, which will facilitate one to achieve liberation or liberation from this world, moksham. So, dharmyamrtam idam, the Krishna calls it as dharmyamrtam. Dharmyamrtam means this dharmam what he has discussed here, which is the nectar. Or in other words, that nectar which helps one to liberate oneself from material world. That is the topic that Krishna has discussed here. That, in other words, we talked about one who takes this with Shraddha. What is Shraddha? Shastrasya, Guruvakyasya, Satya Buddhyava Dharana, Sa Shraddha. That's what it says. Shastram and Guruvakyam. Spiritual Master's words and Krishna's words. One who has got extreme faith in that. One who lives according to that. Shastrasya, Guruvakyasya, and Satya Buddhyava Dharana. One who finds that as the absolute. Nothing else. Not mixing words with that. Accepting what Krishna has spoken as it is, without questioning that. That is what is expected. So, that is what Krishna says here, Shraddha. Shraddha dana malparama bhakta sediva me priyaham. That why this is important is, this chapter is important is this. In this one chapter, Krishna has spoken about one important thing, that is the process by which one can take his spirit soul back to the spiritual world. In other words, realizing the self, self-realization. That's the only topic that is discussed in this chapter, isn't it? Now, it is true that in the Vedic tradition, there is no other topic that is considered important except this. This is the only topic that is considered from the Vedic point of view. How to free oneself from this material entanglement, or in other words, liberation, freedom from this entanglement. This is what is discussed in this chapter. So, why it is discussed like this is, that in other parts of the world, if you look in other parts of the world, a lot of time and energy had been spent how to retain this dead body. When the body dies, for example, you must have read this in the history also, how the mummies were built, and so many things were performed, so that they can extend the life of this body, isn't it? Somehow or the other, if we can keep this body in good shape or good condition. But in Vedic tradition, there is no discussion about body. Body is not important. Body has no value. The stress is given on the soul. And this knowledge of the soul is not discussed anywhere else except in the Vedic tradition, to the depth that it has gone through in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Upanishads. Or in Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no importance given to anything else in this world except the science of the soul. That is the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita. That right from here, if you look, go back in from first chapter, right up to this end of this 12th chapter, you will notice one thing. Krishna never spoke one time about how to look after the body, has he? He has not given any importance to it. The whole science is centered around the science of going back home, back to Krishna. How to leave this body and how to go back to the spiritual world. Or how one finds oneself, one's own true identity. That is the that is the importance of this. That there is no other topic important in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita does not give any importance to any other topic. Whereas in other places like in Egypt and Greece and so many other places, even in Europe, so much money has been spent on how to sustain this body further for a longer period of time. And they have given a lot of tons and tons of energy they have spent in that process. If somehow or the other they can get life back to this body. But Bhagavad Gita is saying from the very point that this body is not to be taken that seriously. It is one of the 8.4 million bodies that what you have got, and you are not going to be a big loser by leaving this body either. Whereas most of the people who are trying to preserve the body are thinking that if I lose this body, what's going to happen? How can I survive? Krishna is saying, no, out of the 8.4 million different bodies, the human body is one of them. If you utilize it properly, you can find your true identity, spiritual identity, and that way you don't have to come back to this changing body's business again. That is the most important thing. That is why it's called dharmyamradam. Yedu dharmyamradam idam yadoktam parivasadem yadoktam parivasadem shraddhadana amal parama bhakta sediva me priyaha. Krishna is saying, one who is following this process is very, very dear to me. Very, very dear to me. So with this, the 12 chapters of Bhagavad Gita finishes. 12 chapters of Bhagavad Gita finishes. Now, in these 12 chapters, we have covered now, first 6 chapters refer to karma yoga, isn't it? And then the next 6 chapters refer to bhakti. So 6 and 6, 12 chapters are finished. The 6 chapters are called one shalkam. So first shalkam refers to karmam, and second shalkam refers to bhakti. And the last shalkam, now the remaining six chapters, is what is referred to as jnanam, the knowledge side. So, prior to moving to this 13th chapter, let us look back a little bit into these 12 chapters and see what we have understood from there. In the chapter 1, Krishna talked about what? Krishna spoke, it was Arjuna Vishada Yogam, it's called, isn't it? Arjuna expressing his situation to Krishna and telling him that what he felt when he came to the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That is where he started the Bhagavad Gita. And that chapter, Krishna hasn't spoken anything seriously about the spiritual life. Krishna heard everything what Arjuna has to say. And immediately, in second chapter, Krishna begins with the what is known as Sankhya Yogam, or the contents of Bhagavad Gita summarized. And in that Sankhya Yogam chapter, Krishna talked two things, Sankhyam and Karmam, or Jnanam and Karmam. Both were spoken in that chapter. And it is in that chapter, Krishna stressed the importance of Karmam. Isn't it? The Chatur Sutram was spoken in that chapter. Karmanye Vadhigaraste, we have spoken about that. Ma Bhaleshu Kadanchana, Ma Karma Bhalahe Dubur, Madhu Sangostu Karmani. How important karma is in one's life, that point has been brought out in that second chapter. Not being satisfied with that, in the third chapter, Krishna discusses this Karma Yogam in detail. That's what you find in the third chapter, Karma Yogam. So in Karma Yogam, Krishna made us understand, made us realize what our connection with this external world is, isn't it? Because there he says, evam pravartidam chakram, there is a wheel that is working in this world, it is called Karma Chakram. And we are in that Karma Chakram. You have no freedom to jump out of it quickly. Straight away you can't get out of it. Evam kavartaya chakram nanuvartaya dihaya akhairindriya ramo moham parthasa jivari. Krishna says there that evam pravartidam chakram. Krishna discussed that chakram there first. What is that chakram? Chakram means the wheel. This karmam wheel, wheel of karmam is working under such and such rules. Krishna spoke about that. The lust, the greed, the anger, and so many different things. What controls our karma, the modes of nature. So many things Krishna has spoken there and told us that you are in this subtle wheel, what is rotating here, karma chakram. And unless one escapes from that karma chakram, evam pravartidam chakram nanu vartaya dihaya, one is not free oneself from that. Akhair indriya ramo moham parthasa jivari. Krishna says otherwise, by sense control and controlling the mind and senses, if one does not learn how to free oneself from that, he will get implicated in that and he will have to go through a very tedious and long process for a very long period of time. That's what was discussed in the third chapter, Karma Yogam. Immediately after that Karma Yogam, Arjuna got into the doubt that earlier Krishna spoke about Jnanam in the second chapter. Now Krishna is talking about karma. What is important? Arjuna asked Krishna at that time, whether I should engage in jnanam, whether I should engage in karma. This question came up in Arjuna's mind. In reply to that, in the fourth chapter, what is titled as Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yogam, Krishna says, jnanam and karma is not the goal of life. Goal is Krishna. That is first thing to realize, that these are processes to get there. But jnanam and karmam, if that becomes the goal, that is also wrong. For example, somebody takes to karmam process, karma yoga process. Throughout life, if he engages only in karma yoga, not thinking about Krishna at the end, then that is also not a perfection of that life. Similarly, cultivating spiritual knowledge up to a limit is necessary. But after that, if one does not come to the conclusion that Krishna is the absolute truth and surrendering to Krishna is the goal, if that realization hasn't come, all his jnanamargam is also a waste of time. It has also not taken him to the right goal. So this is what he is pointing out in the fourth chapter in the beginning, that jnanam and karmam is only the process. The goal is Krishna. That is what he stressed in the fourth chapter. That's why it's titled as Jnana Karma Sanyasa Yoga. So after that chapter, Arjuna has got the doubt that whether I should follow the Jnana Sanyasam or Karma Sanyasam. Krishna explains there that jnana sannyasam is easier, karma sannyasam is more is difficult, from the sense that Arjuna, being a kshatriya, is expected of him to engage in fighting. Or in other words, if he gives up his karma, occupational duty, he will be inviting trouble for himself. It is in relationship with that Krishna has spoken about the chaturvarnyam, the four varnas and four ashramas. and how this division has come about in this world under the modes of nature. These divisions have happened only under the modes of nature. Modes of nature is the cause of that division. Often people think that birth is the cause of this division. Birth is not the cause of division. Modes of nature is the cause of division. People in the society get divided into four different groups according to their modes of nature. For example, a brahmana, by virtue of his sattvagunam, he acts as a brahmana. That means predominating quality in that person is sattvagunam. The, say, 80% that sattvagunam and 20% rajogunam is what is in a brahmana's nature. Similarly, in a kshatriya's nature, it is 80% rajogunam and probably 20% sattvagunam in him. It is the other way. So, there itself, the difference in the modes of nature has already divided those two people accordingly. Similarly, when it comes to a Vaishya, Vaishya's nature is 80% rajogunam and 20% tamogunam. And for a Shudra, on the other hand, 80% tamogunam and probably 20% rajogunam. Not necessarily exactly 80-20 ratio, but a predominating part of the gunam in him is either tamogunam for a Shudra or rajogunam for a Vaishya. So when these qualities are there, that has already made the division in the society. And that is what Krishna was trying to point out there. We, in due course, people started taking that, based on birth, it is always happening that is a brahmana kshatriya. That was a misconception that has developed in later years. In Krishna's point of view, that it is purely the qualities that should determine this division, nothing else. And the other things, of course, by being born in a family of brahmana, there's a possibility that he may develop that strong modes of nature to a higher degree. That is a possibility. But Srinarada Maharshi, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while discussing about the Varnashrama Dharma, he says, Yatsa yallakshanam proktam pumsam varna bhiven jagam. He says there very, yallakshanam proktam, whatever lakshanams I have talked about here, that is not to be taken strictly in the literary sense. Everything depends on the individual at the end. Individual, if he has that higher modes of nature in him, naturally he has to be accepted as a brahmana. That is all these things were spoken about there. And it is after that, Arjuna understood that a person who has come to this far in spiritual life, he has purified himself from his karmam side. Karmic act, karmam has been purified. Now he is readying for dhyanam. That is why in the 6th chapter it is titled as Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga means only for a person who has purified his karmam by purification, by karma yoga process, only then he will be in a position to practice Dhyana Yoga or the meditation process. Only then he can fix his mind on Krishna. Otherwise the mind will waver. It will not stay because the mind is infected with the lower modes of nature. The purity hasn't come there so far. So that is why Dhyana Yogam was discussed in the 6th chapter. Immediately after the Dhyana Yogam, Krishna talks about the knowledge of the Absolute, which is known as the Jnana Yogam, the nature of the Absolute Truth. And one who has practiced the Dhyanam process in that way, he can understand that chapter in reality. Krishna says it can be experienced in that. And in the 8th chapter, which is after that, immediately followed by that, Krishna discusses about the letter Om, Pranavam. Akshara Brahma Yogam, it is referred to. The impersonal side of the Absolute Truth. That is what is discussed in there. And then immediately after that, in the 9th chapter, Krishna discusses the King of Knowledge, which is known as Raja Yogam. Raja Vidya Raja Yogam. Krishna says, after, by now, Karma Yogam and to some extent Dhyana Yogam or Raja Yogam was discussed. But now onwards, Krishna is driving us towards the Supreme Personality, Krishna Himself. And how to understand Krishna's position as the Absolute Truth and how to discriminate from all the other yoga processes, what is discussed, how difficult it is to practice and the importance of Bhakti Yoga process, all that is discussed from the 9th chapter onwards. 9th chapter is Raja Vidya or Raja Gukhyam, Raja Yogam. And when Arjuna heard about this Raja Yogam, Arjuna wanted to know, understand Krishna's true nature, Krishna's real identity. It is then that, in order to quench that desire of Arjuna's heart, Krishna decided to manifest his universal form in front of Arjuna. And that is how the universal form was shown to Arjuna. And when Arjuna showed the universal form, Arjuna understood that this 11th chapter, when Arjuna showed the universal form of Krishna, and when at the end of that universal form, when Krishna told Arjuna that mal karma kṛta mal paramo mal bhakta asanga varjidaha nirvaira sarvabhudeshu yasamameti pandavaha. The last words Krishna says to Arjuna, become my devotee, mal karma kṛta mal paramo mal bhakta asanga varjidaha. All the words are very important. Do everything for me, Krishna says, become mine, my person, Krishna's man. Mal karma kṛta mal paramo mal bhakta. Become my devotee, Sangha Varjidaha, and give up the association of Sangha modes of nature, with the lower modes of nature. And then, Nurvaira Sarva Bhudeshu, and develop Nurvairam, free from enmity towards other living entities. Samamedi Pandavaha. Krishna says, such a person can come back to me. So, when Arjuna heard this in the 11th chapter, Krishna understood that Arjuna is now ready to hear the glories of bhakti or bhakti yoga process. And that is how in the 12th chapter Krishna talked about, in these 20 verses, Krishna brought about the most beautiful aspect of bhakti yogam for us to understand what is bhakti means. And in there Krishna has taken us through 4 different stages. Verse 8, 9, 10, 11. If you remember, we talked about that. That what does bhakti means? And what does bhakti expects from us? What does Bhakti Devi, what is expected of us in the bhakti process? All these things are covered in the 4 chapter, in the 4 verses. And in the end, Krishna says here, yedu dharmyamrita, and all the qualities that is required for a devotee. That is all spoken in that chapter. So, with these 12 chapters, in Bhagavad Gita has been divided into 3 sections, karmam, bhakti and jnanam. Karmam and bhakti has now more or less closed. Although bhakti and jnanam is also repeated at different places, this division of Bhagavad Gita in this manner is not 100% that it is all bhakti yogam in the 6th chapter. There is also jnanam mentioned. Similarly, you will find in the next 6 chapters, although the important point that is discussed is about spiritual knowledge and the importance of knowledge in spiritual life. These things are discussed in the next 6 chapters. But there is also discussion about bhakti now and then. These can be separated easily. They all go together. So that is why we move on to the 13th chapter. This 13th chapter is, and the remaining 6 chapters, they are very important for those who follow the Jnana Margam. Because they study this very much in depth. They study these chapters. The reason why they study these chapters in depth is, one of the main problem for us is that we are unable to come out of our bodily concept of life, isn't it? This bodily concept of life is the biggest problem. That we may think that theoretically we understand so many things. But none of them is happening to us yet. In other words, it's not manifesting in us. Why is not manifesting in us? Because this bodily concept of life is so deep-rooted in us. It is very difficult to pull it out easily from there. It will come back no matter how hard you try. It will still come back, the bodily identity. Because that's all what we know. We never know what a spiritual identity means, isn't it? And because it is so deep-rooted, the only way the acharyas have found to break that away is through this Jnana Yogam process. To get out of this is Jnana Yogam process can help. And that is why in this very chapter, Krishna starts banging on this point very strongly. He smashes it from the very beginning. Earlier in the 2nd chapter, you have seen in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna told us that Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tada dehandara pratir dhirastatrana mukhyati. From verse 10 onwards, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the 2nd chapter, Krishna told Arjuna in several verses our true identity, what we are. Krishna has spoken that. But in spite of hearing all that, it hasn't done much good to us. We are still where we are, isn't it? We are studying all these things, but still the impact is not there on us, what it should come out of that. So in order that, it has to go break through that, break through that heart, break through our conception of bodily identity Krishna brings that Jnana Yogam in a much more powerful and one of the most beautiful presentations for which Krishna has been glorified by all the great acharyas is these chapters onwards. And these six chapters, which comprises these last six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, what is referred to is that the first chapter is known as the 13th chapter, the Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. It is referred to as Kshetram and Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. Kshetram, what is Kshetram? What is Kshetrajna? That is the discussion in the first chapter. And the discussion is so good that when you go through, only then you realize the beauty of Vedic philosophy. The way it brings the living entity to life, to think how to break away from this identity with the body and how to come closer to the spiritual reality. That is what it is doing. That is why that chapter is titled as Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. Similarly, the other chapters in these six chapters, they are also in order to bring the living entity free from this conditioning. Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam, which is the next chapter, that is the 14th chapter, is called Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogam. That means the three modes of material nature, how that controls the living entity. And then the Purushottama Yogam, the yoga of the Supreme Person, which is referred to as Purushottama Yogam. And then Devasura Sambhad Vibhaga Yogam. In other words, the demonic nature and the divine nature, how that comes to a living entity. Those things are discussed in the next one. And then importance of Shraddha, or the seriousness in spiritual life. Shraddha Traya Vibhaga Yogam. And eventually, liberation, or the yoga of liberation, Sannyasa Yogam. So, these six chapters, which is called as the Jnana Prakaranam. Jnana Prakaranam means, that refers to the knowledge side of the Bhagavad Gita. That is what is discussed from now on. So, these chapters generally are discussed in depth with one intention only. By contemplation of these chapters, one can become closer to the truth. One can get to fix his mind, release from the conditioned state. As long as one is studying Bhagavad Gita regularly and one reads Bhagavad Gita regularly, it is bound to have an effect on that person. It is impossible to change one's thinking if one studies Bhagavad Gita seriously. It's impossible to change one's thinking. And because Bhagavad Gita has not spoken any other subject except the science of the soul, it makes all the more fascinating for one who is genuinely interested in spiritual life. For him, Bhagavad Gita is the answer. There is no other answer. And there is no topic there to compete with others and or to show to others that I am better than you or better than me. No. This is purely a relationship between the living entity and Krishna. And the living entity, in order that he can go further in spiritual path, when you study this first chapter, these things will become clearer. Why it is so different than the all other chapters. 13th chapter is very important in Bhagavad Gita. Because in 13th chapter, Krishna will very categorically say to us that so long as this bodily concept of life is within us, it is not possible to make oneself understand what spiritual identity means. As long as we hold on to this body, and the identity with the body is so strong, and no matter how much we study and do all other activities in this world, unless that bodily identity will goes away, the knowledge is not going to influence our consciousness to the extent we need it. One devotee has studied Srimad Bhagavatam very, very seriously. Very seriously he studied Srimad Bhagavatam for a long period of time. And at the time of death, before he just left his body, sometime before that, he realized still that how this bodily identity is still disturbing him. Even after studying Srimad Bhagavatam, he was experiencing that. So at that point, he said to Krishna, Hi me deha moham. This deha moham, my identity with the body is still very, very, very strong. I am unable to come out of it. Teja pavana puradi shayal prema hetoho. What is the consequences of that? Because of my identity with the material body, what I am experiencing now is Dehe putre kalatra dishum. That my understanding is this, because of identification with the body, my attachment to everything else in this world is also equally strong. Equally strong. Tvalpadam vismarandi. The result of all that is that I am tend to forget your lotus feet. Krishna's lotus feet we forget. Because the more and more we identify with the body, from body identification, the attachment for all the extensions will start. Bodily extensions, which means all the other extended family members, and then things like country, nation, this, that, all other types of things, whatever that comes from the bodily extensions. So, devotee says to Krishna that Dehe vitte kalatradishu tulpadam vismarandi. That not only attachment to the deham, attachment to the body, but attachment to all other materialistic objects also builds up from there. And the result of all that is tulpadam vismarandi. Krishna's lotus feet is forgotten in that process. So even studying Srimad Bhagavatam, he has come to this conclusion and prayed to Krishna very sincerely that Swayam Vanyeshu Novam, that I know this body is one day going to be eaten by the dogs, isn't it? The body, the end of this body in four or five different ways, isn't it? Either it is eaten by the dogs or foxes or whatever it is, or it is burned into ashes to be eaten by the fire, or it is cremated, whatever it is. One way or the other, it is going to finish. But still, my early attachment to this body is never finishing. This is the predicament most of us are in, isn't it? Soyam vanyeshu novam. That knowing very well, still I am unable to give up this attachment. He prayed to Krishna like this. In Ekadasi Skandam, while talking to Uddhava, Krishna also refers this very important point. That sampradocha akshikarnam to jihva gay vigarshandi avashamadumedo kobinatwal padabjayam. All what is happening is, in this body, I have got all the different senses. And what does these senses do? The senses are still pulling me towards different sense objects. That's all what this body is doing. And in that situation, through different ropes, the senses have put the ropes on the living entity and pulling it towards different sense objects. In that process, the bodily attachment is becoming very, very strong. That is what it says there. And Tok jihwa agri vigarshandi avashamadamada kobinatwal padabjay. All these senses are only doing one thing to me. They are pulling me towards the sense objects. Kobinatwal padabjay. Nobody is pulling me towards your lotus feet. That is what the devotee said to Krishna. So, this is the situation with most of us. That so long as this bodily concept of life is very powerful, and as long as it is in us, it is very difficult to overcome. So therefore, in this Jnana Prakaranam, from the next remaining six chapters, Krishna begins with this important issue of bodily identity, straight away in the 13th chapter. And this 13th chapter is important in the sense that there are many things to look at it. In Bhagavad Gita, if you look at different editions of Bhagavad Gita, not only our proper Bhagavad Gita, other Bhagavad Gita, you'll find some places the first verse in this Bhagavad Gita is missing. That means the first verse in this 13th chapter. So, some Bhagavad Gita's, some publications, you will find the first verse missing. But Prabhupada has taken that verse, Arjuna Vacha, the first verse in this chapter. But many other acharyas, they have left out that verse. There is a little disagreement on that. But that is not an important thing. Only Arjuna is asking a question there. There is no answers from Krishna involved. But sometimes people may think that why it is that one verse has come extra in that, in our Bhagavad Gita, other people have not included that Bhagavad Gita. Whatever it is, important thing is Krishna, Arjuna is inquiring now to Krishna about this one important point. So that is how this chapter begins, the 13th chapter. When the 12th chapter was completed, what we had to remember there was, Krishna told about certain qualities of a devotee. And Krishna said, all those who have these qualities, they are in my list. They are on Krishna's list. So it is the time now, if we are not in the list, we also try to get into that list. That's what that 12th chapter was talking about. Now in the 13th chapter, that Krishna begins with this important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So there Krishna is, Arjuna is asking this important questions to Krishna. Arjuna is asking, what are the question? Prakritim purusham jaiva kshetram kshetrajnam eva cha. Prakriti and Purushan. Kshetram and Kshetrajnam. Jnanam and Ayam. These are the three issues what Arjuna has raised there, isn't it? In that 13th chapter. Arjuna Vacha. Arjuna is asking these three questions. Prakriti and Purushan. Kshetram and Kshetrajnam. Jnanam and Ayam. Prakriti and Purushan means material nature and the Supreme Personality, Purushan. And Kshetram and Kshetrajnam, the field and the knower of the field. And Jnanam, knowledge, and Jnayam, to be known. All these things are covered in this chapter. So, Krishna says here that immediately Krishna begins with this one important point here. That Krishna says here, Idam Shariram Kaundeya Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate. This Shariram, material body, is called Kshetram. What does Kshetram mean? This is one important thing to know. Kshetram means, Kshetram has several meanings. Kshetram has several meanings. Kshetram in one referred to as the land where food is grown. That is also called Kshetram. Anna Kshetram, food is grown. Kshetram also refers to another meaning. Say for example, play field, playing ground. That is called Krida Kshetram, where one has the opportunity to play different games. That is Krida Kshetram. Krishna says here that this material body what you have is also called Kshetram. Why is it called Kshetram? It is very interesting to note that. Why this is called Kshetram? Kshetram generally produces something, isn't it? It produces. Like for example, the field where we grow the food, that is called Kshetram. Bhumi, where it food is produced, say like the wheat or the rice or the grain, any grains that's grown, that's all Kshetram. That's all Kshetram. So there the food is grown. Similarly, in the body also we grow food. Only thing is, it's not fruits that we produce here, it's karmam that we grow in this body. That is why this is refers to as Kshetram. Just see how all these words fall into its own place. When you understand the indicate meaning of these words, only then you can appreciate in relationship with the Krishna consciousness and the karma, laws of karma, how this body is related. In this particular body, Krishna says, you can grow something and you can destroy something also in this field or called material body. What is that? It is called karma. And therefore, because karma can grow in this body, it is called Kshetram. It is called Kshetram. Not only you can grow karmam here, you can destroy your karmam also in this body by acting in the proper way. That is the science Krishna is discussing in Karma Yogam and in the other chapters in the future also. So, iti Kshetram, Kshetram, Kshetrajnaya or Jnanam. Krishna is saying here that the Kshetram is not only the field. This is as important a Kshetram as that Kshetram where you grow the food. There is a story about this. A farmer was growing food in his land. So every morning he used to get up, take the plow. In the olden days how it was, they used to put the plow on their shoulder, walk to the field, and whole day he will work plowing the field to prepare itself for growing food in that. That was his profession. He used to do that. So, one Buddha Bhikshu, one Buddhist monk, was once traveling, and the Buddhist monks, they have this thing called Bhicham Dehi, isn't it? They ask for Bhicha. So, he came up to this farmer and asked for Bhicha, begged for food from him. And this Buddha Bhikshu was a very young person. Very well, very strong and very fit. And the farmer looked at him and told him, are you not ashamed to do this? He said, instead of going out and working like me, look at me, he said. Every morning I get up. After I get up, I don't waste my time. As soon as I am ready, I take all my tools and implements, I go into the land to plow the field. Whole day I am working there. And in the end, after months together I work like this, then I water the land as much necessary, I sow the seed, and the plants come out, they grow, and I work hard day and night to produce, and at the end I get the results of that. I get the produce from the land, the wheat or grain, whatever that is, and I live my life like this. You, such a young person like you, not wanting to do any work, and wandering around like this, asking for food like this, I'm not going to give you any food, he said. He said, the farmer told this Buddha Bhikshu. He told him like this. So the Bhikshu smiled at him and told him, my dear friend, you are not the only farmer. I am also a farmer, he said. I am also a farmer. So the farmer said to him, what kind of farmer are you? Where is your plough if you are a farmer? Where is your land? What do you grow? He said. The Bhikshu told him, let me tell you, he said, I wander in this world, and what do I do? Every time I plow my mind, I plow my mind with discrimination and with detachment. I'll push these things. These are my two plows. I plow my mind with these two things. When I am plowing my mind with discrimination and detachment, so many good things comes out of that. Eventually, detachment comes from me, and I get detached from this world in that way. And these are the activities what I am engaged in. And this is the type of farming I am doing. That is the type of work I do. I am not only engaged like you in growing food. That is not the only farming in this world. But Vivegam and Vairagyam. And in this process, what I am trying to do is, eventually I get the results of that within me. What is that? Spiritual happiness that comes to me. That is the product of my spiritual life. In other words, this kshetram or this field or this material body is that land what Krishna has given to us for us to plough with all the spiritual knowledge. Plough it all the time. The result of that ploughing will be spiritual happiness will come from that. And spiritual realizations will come from that. Bhiksham Dehi, he says to him, give me the food, he said. Farmer, because he was intelligent, he understood that his land and ploughing the land is not the only ploughing. Everything requires effort in this world. And it is that effort that what Krishna is talking about in this chapter. What effort is required from our side in order that we engage in the similar ploughing like the farmer was doing with our mind. So in order that the spiritual knowledge has to develop within oneself, one has to continuously engage in this contemplation of this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. With the result of that, with the help of that, one can plow one's own mind. And one does that, the result will be that spiritual happiness or anandam will come from that. That is what Krishna is saying, the story is telling us. That kshetram kshetrajnayor jnanam. That kshetram and kshetrajnan, one has to discriminate that. That is the beginning of the spiritual life, Krishna says here. The Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Krishna is saying these things to Arjuna, that the weeds that is inside, that the weeds are the ignorance, isn't it? Different kinds of ignorance in us. If you remember, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we talked about different kinds of ignorances. Moham, Mahamoham, Tamasa. These are all different kinds of ignorances. Tamisram, Andhamisram, different Brahma, during the process of creation, different kinds of ignorance has been put into us all. And they are the weeds inside. That weeds has to be pulled out. And the weeds has to be pulled out. And how could you do that? That by discrimination. That plough called discrimination that is used and continuously ploughing the mind with that. When you start ploughing that, from there comes out vairagyam. Detachment will come from that. And vivekam. Discrimination will develop into detachment. And when those things are developed, the spiritual knowledge will start working within. Krishna says there. That spiritual knowledge will start manifesting. And that is the duty of a person who wants to go back home, back to Krishna. That he has to engage in this activity as much time as possible through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. That will help a person to do this activity within himself. In order to do that, the support of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam is there. That is why in different instances you will notice in Srimad Bhagavatam also, wherever an opportunity comes, Sukadeva Goswami will bring out these points very clearly. He will say this. Especially in all the glorifications you will notice. When through the glorification Sukadeva Goswami is speaking these points through them, whether it is Dhruva, whether it is Dhruva or whether it is Prahlada or whether it is Akrura or Uddhava or Gopis or Vritrasura or Ambarisha or Bhishma or Kunti Devi or Parishad Maharaj, no matter who it is, in all their prayers, these ideas and thoughts will be coming through again and again. Why? In order that one could utilize that, their experiences in one's own analysis on one's own consciousness, one's own mind. As long as it is done, it will have its results also. Sukadeva Goswami practically has done this, and that is the reason why he is able to say like this. How did he do that? That is evident in the Bhagavatam itself. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam in the beginning, you will notice there is a verse which is generally offered as prayers to Sukadeva Goswami by Suda Goswami, his disciple. When Suda Goswami arrived in Naimisharanyam, when he spoke two important verses there, what were they? Yam pravrajandam anupedam apedakrityam dvaipayano virahakadaram ajuhava putredi tanmaidayattaravobinedu tam sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi. In that verse, you will find one word, tam sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi. The acharyas have given a commentary on that particular word, sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi. What does it mean? It means Sukadeva Goswami is saying to the sages who have assembled in the Naimisharanyam that tam sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi. I pay my obeisances to that great personality, Sukadeva Goswami, who is present in everyone's heart. How did Sukadeva Goswami know this? He was present in everyone's heart. There are two reasons why Sukadeva Goswami said this. One, whenever Sukadeva Goswami spoke to Parikshit, Sukadeva Goswami was also present there, listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami noticed that when Sukadeva Goswami spoke about Bhishma's prayers, Bhishmastuti, Sukadeva Goswami himself became Bhishma at that time. In his consciousness, he spoke with such purity and clarity, the way Bhishma spoke in the battlefield, that was experienced by everyone who were present there, as though Bhishma was speaking himself there, but although it was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. Similarly, when it came to Kunti Devi, exactly the same experience happened. And the same thing happened with Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlada and all the other great devotees. How could Sukadeva Goswami, who is one person, could speak in different devotees' mood? Bhishma, you must remember this, Bhishma is not like Kunti Devi. Dhruva is not like Bhishma. Prahlada is not like Dhruva. And Ambarish is not like Prahlada. Vritrasura is not like Ambarish. Similarly, Gopis are not like Uddhava. Uddhava is not like Gopis. Akrura is not like Gopis. Akrura is not like Uddhava. Everyone is different in their relationship with Krishna. But the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam is, whenever Sukadeva Goswami spoke on behalf of every one of them, Suda Goswami and many others who are present in the and who are hearing Srimad Bhagavatam sensed that they themselves were speaking, although they were sitting in the dress of Sukadeva Goswami. How was this possible? That is why he has not forgotten to mention this. Tum sarvabhudahridayam munim anadosmi. Sarvabhudahridayam, in all the living entities, to become like that, that capacity Sukadeva Goswami had. He had that capacity to come to that consciousness, that realization of so Swami was so high that he will become like that while he is speaking about that. That is one. Secondly, when Sukadeva Goswami told Suda Goswami, when the Bhagavatam was spoken to Parikshit, and when everyone was leaving, Parikshit Maharaj went back to the spiritual world, all those who were present present there wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam again. And they were all talking to each other, when will we hear Bhagavatam again? This was there. Because Bhagavatam has affected them so much. All those personalities, thousands of sages were present there. And they were all affected by Srimad Bhagavatam to such an extent that when the Bhagavatam was finished, Sudhadev Goswami was ready to leave. When he was ready to leave, they were talking to each other, when will we get an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam again? This is the words that has come out from their mouth. They approached Sudhadev Goswami and asked Sudhadev Goswami, where can we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam again? Because they were not satisfied with hearing once. Strictly speaking, if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam once, like Parikshit has heard, that is enough. That is enough. That is the beauty of Bhagavatam. You don't have to even chant the holy name. Just hear Srimad Bhagavatam once properly from a personality like Sudhadev Goswami, you are back in the spiritual world. That is the power of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is so powerful that it is not even asking us to chant Hare Krishna at this time. Just hear. That first thing what Parikshit did was nothing but just heard Bhagavatam once. And that was enough, he went back to the spiritual world. So, knowing very well the power of Srimad Bhagavatam, these sages wanted to know that when will they hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Why everybody else didn't go back? That is another story. That's the reason behind it. But here the sages wanted to know, when can we hear Srimad Bhagavatam again? It is at that time that Sudhadev Goswami told them that Sudha, who is sitting there, he will go to Naimisharanyam and he will speak Srimad Bhagavatam there again. Those who want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam can go to Naimisharanyam and hear there again Srimad Bhagavatam from Sudha Goswami. So, taking these instructions from Sukadeva Goswami, Sudha Goswami went to Naimisharanyam, isn't it? Sudha Goswami went to Naimisharanyam. So, when he arrived in Naimisharanyam, all the great personalities, Shaunagarishi and others who were present in Naimisharanyam, they asked Sudha Goswami, come, they welcomed him in a big way, they welcomed him so well that for how long have we been waiting for you to come? When can we start Srimad Bhagavatam? This was the question from the Shaunagarishi and others who were present in Naimisharanyam. Now, normally, somebody has come to speak Bhagavatam. If you tell him, oh, what have you come for? If you ask him like that, he says, oh, I want to talk Srimad Bhagavatam. Alright, we'll start next in a few days' time. Does that look very good to the speaker? No. But on the other hand, if all the listeners were saying to him, oh, when can we start Bhagavatam? We have been waiting for this. There is a little different, isn't it? It's a little different feeling that brings in there. So at that point, Sudha Goswami says there, who answered all of these sages have answered me in this way? What prompted them to do this? Tam sarva bodha hridayam munima anadosmi. It is nothing but Sudha Goswami had entered into their heart and spoke from there, and that is how I have heard Srimad Bhagavatam, that I have no doubt that Sudhadev Goswami has spoken Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sudhadev Goswami has asked this question through them, asking me to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So in these two instances, you can see that Sudhadev Goswami recognizing Sudhadev Goswami's position in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The result of, we were talking about ploughing this mind with the knowledge, not the spiritual knowledge. So what is required is Shraddha. Krishna again stresses that point. With Shraddha comes Vivekam, discrimination, and Vairagyam, detachment. When these two things are there simultaneously, the result of that will be that spiritual life will come from that. Otherwise spiritual life won't happen. Simply by engaging in ritualistic life, spiritual life is not going to happen. It is just going to be another ritual. Whole lifetime people engage in spiritual activities in the name of ritualism. And the ritualism gives them some satisfaction. But Krishna is saying here that this knowledge, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, is such an important thing that if it is not absorbed in one's own consciousness, that is not going to help very much. If it is not done, then the position of the living entity is same, and it is not going to improve very much. That is why the importance of this chapter. This 13th chapter is so important that as we go through it, you will find so many interesting things. So many interesting things. Krishna has also spoken here, idam shariram kaundeya. Krishna says, kshetram itabdiyade. This shariram or this material body is called kshetram. It is called a kshetram because it is like a field where you can produce food. Similarly, here you can produce karma. That is why the word used is karma phalam. Phalam means fruit, isn't it? So the fruits are growing inside in this body. This is where you grow the fruit of karma. That is why this is called kshetram. This is why it is called a kshetram. Now, Krishna is saying here that in all kshetram, in other words, all these kshetram, different material bodies, whether it is human body or animal body or bird's body or beast body, doesn't matter, in every body, Krishna says, the kshetrajnan is me. I am the occupier of that kshetram. I am present inside that kshetram as the occupier. I occupy there. So, now come to another important thing. When Krishna is saying here that kshetram is the field and kshetrajnan is Krishna, Krishna enters into this body as kshetrajnan, isn't it? We all know that Supersoul is within us. And we, part and parcel of Krishna, is also present in the same body. We as part and parcel of Krishna is also present in the same body. But in this body, who is more important? Krishna is more important. Supersoul is more important. It is Him who is keeping the whole thing. We are only a tiny spark from that is fallen off. And the tiny spark has an existence there as long as the Supersoul is present there. Isn't it? As long as once the Supersoul decides to leave, then there is no question of us living there either. We have to go with Him. There's no, all the decisions are taken by Him, not by us. Our karma, our record of karma, our activities, our desires, our liking and disliking, so many things, everything what we consider is ours, who monitors that within, it's Him who is monitoring. So Krishna is saying here, kshetram and kshetrajnan is me, the field is there, that is your material body, and inside that it's me who is staying there. And that is why Krishna calls him as the kshetrajnam. Kshetram kshetrajnam. Idam shariram kaundeya kshetram iti abhidhiyade. Shariram is nothing. This material body is nothing but kshetram. And in that, the kshetrajnam is me. Now, it is from this concept that in the Vedic philosophy, the temples have been built. I don't know whether you have read these things, because these are important things to know. What is a temple has been built for? And what is the relationship with this body? If you look into chapter 11 and 12, the universal form of Krishna, where we discussed about the universal form, you will find there that the whole creation exists because Krishna exists within, isn't it? Krishna's, everything exists within Krishna. The whole universal form exists within Krishna. That is Krishna's universal body. The miniature form of that universal body is us here. In one body, in small material body, we are also present here in this body. Everything that is in that gross body of Krishna is exist within us also. Nothing different, isn't it? Earth, water, air, ether and fire, they are in that Krishna's gross body. They, in this universal form, they are also present within us. They are also present within us. All these things are discussed in detail much later. But coming back to this point, why the temples are constructed in this way, in order to tell us that the relationship between the gross nature and the subtle nature. In the 11th chapter, Krishna discussed about the universal form. In the 12th chapter, Krishna discussed about the devotee. About the devotee relationship with that gross body of Krishna. Or in other words, whatever Krishna has spoken in the 11th chapter, in order to realize that, you have to follow the 12th chapter, what is discussed as the bhakti process, in the 12th chapter. So the process that is discussed in the 12th chapter will take us to realize what is discussed in the 11th chapter, or Krishna's universal position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will be realized by the 12th chapter, by the process. Now in the 13th chapter, Krishna is saying there, what other extra tools have been given to us in order for us to relate, follow that process. And one of that main thing is the temples. Temples are nothing but Krishna's expressions of how to develop that. And Krishna's body, temple and our body, they are all in one way related to each other. Our body, Krishna's body and the temple, they are all related to each other. We will realize that as we start discussing about the temple. For example, temples which are built strictly according to the Shastram, which are built according to the Shastram, they have to follow certain rules, and there are very stringent rules in relationship with building temples in the Vedic philosophy. And the reason for that is that when one enter into a temple, one has to experience that he is starting a journey towards back home, back to Krishna. So in order that this point is brought through, our acharyas have linked all the sciences together in the temple design, in designing temples and building temples. They have brought all these things together. For example, in the Shastram there is reference to, you will notice, ancient temples were built long ago, strictly based on the Shastram. They will find that they have followed these rules very strictly. For example, if you enter into the temple, the deity room is on its own, which you have noticed, the deity room on its own. In ancient temples you will find this. The deity room on its own, and there is a parikrama marg outside, right outside the deity room, isn't it? And then there is a wall again surrounding that, and there is another parikrama marg outside. And then there is again another wall outside. So one outside the other, it keeps coming like this. Sometimes there is five, sometimes there is seven. Major temples, big temples, they will have many more parikrama marg one outside the other like this. Now, what was the reason why it has been built like this? Only if you think through that, you will see the reference to that in different places. In the science of building temples, the presence of going to see the deity in the temple is as much as trying to see Krishna within our own body. We don't have to go very far. The temple is here itself. It is inside there. Only thing is how to enter inside. That is the science one has to learn. And that process is done in the temple, and the same thing, if it is applied within us, that also becomes the very process of realization. Just like there are rules and regulations while entering to the temple, isn't it? That you have to remove the shoes, you have to take bath, and so many other restrictions attached to entering into a temple. All these things are there to prepare ourselves to go and see Krishna within the temple, isn't it? So the deity room, which is where Krishna is occupying the temple, that room is considered to be the head of the body, Krishna's body. The head of the Krishna's body. Right outside, the place where you circumambulate the deity, that part is considered to be Krishna's face. And right in front of the deity room, where devotees pay their obeisances, and that is considered to be the throat of Krishna's body. So the temple, what is built in a gross form, is nothing but Krishna's body. Krishna is present within, with his extended forms, with his extended hands, arms, legs, everything. And if you go like that, the eventually you will notice the towers outside the temple, they are the Krishna's lotus feet, the two towers on outside. So when far from places, from far from the temple, when you see the towers of the temple, you have to understand that you are seeing Krishna's lotus feet. If you understand all this relationship with Krishna's body, Krishna's temple and our body, then it will make a lot more sense while going to the temple. Otherwise we will just not understanding the connection between all these things. We will start misunderstanding things, that temple can be built any way we like. That is not strictly true, because there is a science behind it, and the science is expecting that the Shastram is followed, and the reason behind it is that they are done strictly according to the Shastram. And it helps for a person who has understanding of these things, when he comes to the temple, he will view the temple and the deity and the other different parts of the temple in the proper way, he will realize that. That is the reason behind it. So here, what Krishna is saying here is that idam shariram kaundeya kshetram iti abhidhiyate. Shariram, your material body, is also a kshetram. Temple is also a kshetram. And Krishna is saying here, there is a relationship between that temple and this temple. When we want to go inside, according to Patanjali's yoga system, there are five kinds of sheets one has to break through before we see the spirit soul within. What are they? Annamaya kosham, pranamaya kosham, manomaya kosham, vijnanamaya kosham, anandamaya kosham. These are the five shells that is within this body. The yogis know about it. Those who are practicing the Ashtanga Yogam, they have the clear concept of all these things. What is Annamayam, what is Pranamayam, what is Manomayam, what is Vijnanamayam, and what is Anandamayam. So Anandamayam Kosham is where the super soul is situated, inside that. These are shells within one within the other. So, as long as we are on the Annamaya Kosham, as we know which we are, very much attached to the bodily needs and bodily necessities, the other koshams is difficult to get in, to know the other koshams. But by practicing of yoga system, one can come out of this Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam and come to Anandamayam. That is what the yogis do. They come out of this different koshams. And it is a process that is going inside. So, in order that to approach Krishna, who is very much within us, all these different shells one has to break through. And because it is not easier for the living entity to do that, we have constructed temples. So, following this same process, but it is done in a larger level, inside the temple, we also reach the inside core of heart, where Krishna is situated in the Anandamaya Kosham, who is present in the deity room also as the deity. So, that is the relationship between the Ashtanga Yogam and the temple construction. Similarly, for the point of view of realizing that worshipping in the temple means is not simply that they have built some temple and we just go in there, pay our obeisances, put some dakshina in the hundi and come out, I've done my duty. That is not the temple worship. Temple worship, strictly speaking, if you understand the science of temple worship, that will become much more interesting. How important it is to go to a temple where everything is done strictly according to the rules and according to the shastram. That makes it much more interesting, because that brings us to the understanding of the spiritual nature also. So, Krishna says here, idam shariram kaundaya kshetram ityabhidhiyate, that the kshetram is referred to in that sense where one has got the opportunity to realize the one's own self. That one can understand that the kshetram and kshetrajnan, they are two different things. They are two different things. One should get this clear in one's own mind. Otherwise, Krishna says it's not possible to go further. What is kshetram? Who is kshetrajnan? What is activities of kshetram? What is activities of kshetrajnan? It is those things that Krishna has discussed in this chapter. And then, while talking about this, Krishna also mentioned something else. That kshetrajnam chabimam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharagam kshetra kshetrajnayor jnanam yatal jnanam madam mama. Krishna says like this, that this knowledge of kshetram, that is so important. Why? Because one story, I will mention that also. With that we will stop today. Some time ago, the knowledge of this chapter in the 13th chapter has been scrutinized and studied by many, many great personalities. They have studied this chapter so scrutinizingly because of the knowledge side what is presented in this chapter. So, it so happened that like many people are affected by this knowledge. When they read this chapter thoroughly and analyze it, it will have an impact on them. It is very difficult to throw it away. It is the nature of that knowledge. That is why it is Bhagavad Gita is different. If a person who is impartial, who is not influenced by the society or his mind is free to look in the spiritual direction, one will immediately get affected by what is spoken in this 13th chapter. That is how clarity is so good in this chapter. So, years ago, when this chapter was discussed, many people were impressed by, in the universities and all, children went to university after their school education. Once it so happened, while they were at school, in one of the lessons, one school teacher asked the children that the teacher was trying to inquire from the children what kind of job they would like to do when they grow up. This was the question, you know, like the career, what they had. Just like nowadays also they do that to some degree, I suppose, that schools have got a system whereby they inquire from the children their tendencies and their desires, what they would like to become. So somebody was saying that he would like to become an engineer, he would like to become a IT professional or doctor or this was so many different things, a profession. So one of the students said to the teacher that I would not like any one of them, he said. So the teacher said, what do you want then? He said to him, none of them fascinates me so much, because I am actually attracted to be driving horses, he said. I like to be horse driving the horse carriage. That's the duty job I like, he said. So all the other children in the class started looking at him, telling him that you must be really stupid, that you want to become a horse driver. Like, what is this big deal? Or that you have to study all these things? Anybody can become that without going through all this. They were trying to ridicule him. So everybody ridiculed him. And this child was intelligent. He had heard Bhagavad Gita from somewhere. See, when he went home that night, he told his mother what happened at the school, that the teacher has questioned like this, and everybody answered like this, and I told them that I want to become a horse driver or driver of a horse carriage, like that, he said. So he thought mother will scold him. She didn't scold him. She told him, you did the correct answer you gave, he said. That's what you should try to develop, said. Took him inside to the deity temple room and showed Krishna with the as Arjuna's charioteer standing there. He said, that is what you should try to develop into. That quality is what Krishna has spoken. And that horse driver, what he has exhibited, similar qualities, that is what one should develop into. In other words, the mother was intelligent enough to see that the child's mind, the mother was able to read that such a qualities were building up in him. And she was able to encourage him in that direction so strongly that he never felt shy later on to stress this point again. Whereas all others spoken for, other jobs, what they were thinking, depending on the salary what they were going to get. This particular student was more concerned about this knowledge what Krishna has spoken in the 13th chapter. So that is the beauty of this 13th chapter. There is a lot of things in this 13th chapter. We'll discuss all that next Sunday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.